We should give ourselves in love and in service to others, in the spirit of generosity and good fellowship. To refuse to give is to refuse to receive, for everything moves in circles. Real giving is the giving of the self, a kind word, a thoughtful act, perhaps just a smile can help lighten the burdens of others. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capitol, California, with instant inspiration. We should give of ourselves in love and in service to others, and in a spirit of generosity and good fellowship. To refuse to give is to refuse to receive, for everything moves in circles. Real giving is the giving of the self. A kind word, thoughtful act, perhaps just a smile, can help lighten the burdens of others. This is found in Ideas for Living by Ernest Holmes. Very gentle, caring, sharing attitude here, and it's very true. However, if we are not a kind word, a thoughtful act, and a smile, because that's our nature, and we put it on, it can be helpful, but not as helpful as when we are a kind word, a thoughtful act, and a smile. You see, this type of statement, however wonderful and positive it is, has to precede itself with the idea that if we realize we're the creators of our world, and we have created everything in our world and everybody in our world, and we have created everyone and everything in our world to be just like we are, that if we are love, our world will be love. If we are good fellowship, our world will be good fellowship. If we know how to give, our world knows how to give. If we know how to receive, our world knows how to receive. Now, I was dealing with someone this afternoon, and they were saying, I would like to be independently wealthy. Well, how can you be independently wealthy if you will not open your bank account, if you will not open your purse strings, if you will not receive it, if you will not hold out to receive it by saying, I claim it, I accept it? You know, there's a lot of people, they are informed that they have just won the sweepstakes or lottery or some other beautiful thing, and they're not home. They're traveling. They're visiting their mother, or they feel sorry for themselves, and so they've taken a year off to go by themselves. Well, now, the sweepstakes doesn't hold it for you. There's a certain period of time, I don't know how long, but after a period of time, they throw it back in the pot, and it goes on to the next people. You've heard of that, where the sweepstakes is bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger because the people didn't claim it. They won it. They bought tickets for it, and they didn't claim it. You follow me? Now, how absolutely wonderful. The person who finally claims it gets all that that those other people could have enjoyed, but will not enjoy because they did not claim it. Now, the only reason they didn't receive it was they did not claim it. How often do we treat and pray like that? How often do we speak our word and say, I am independently wealthy, I'm independently wealthy, I'm independently wealthy. Oh, I'd love to go to Hawaii, but I don't have the money for it. I'd love to buy a new computer, but I haven't got the money for it. I'd love to get a present for my wife or my son or my daughter or my uncle or my aunt or my mother or father or whatever, you know, but I can't afford it. When Ellen first came to the ranch here, it was the history of her family to always buy gold chains for the children at each birth time they were born. I mean, naturally, they're only born once. But for every child, they'd get a beautiful gold chain, and usually with a name on it, right? Okay. Well, Ellen's daughter, Mariella, is very prolific. She has five kids. Now, that's not the point. But I said to Ellen, they're not going to think anything of those chains. They're going to put those chains in the drawer. Maybe they'll wear them, maybe they won't. But That's not the important thing. What is the gift that you could give to your grandchildren that'd be the greatest gift in the world? And she instantly said, myself, of course. I said, well, then start giving the gift of yourself to your grandchildren and stop trying to compete with all of the other relatives who give presents to them and who are loving and generous to the kids and their own parents who are quite wealthy. And they can provide for the kids in ways that you will never know. But the only thing they can't provide is you, is your loving presence, your loving self. Now, our statement here says something to that effect. It says, can lighten the load of others. It says, we should give of ourselves in love and in service to others and in the spirit of generosity and good fellowship. To give is to refuse to give is to refuse to receive, for everything moves in circles. Now, when Ellen gave in competition to the relatives, that was like nothing. What did you give me? What did you give me? What did you give me? You know, comparing the relatives to each other, the kids, you know. What did you get on your birthday? What these different people give you, you know. And Grandpa Alias give you? What Grandma Ellen give you? What, the other grandmas give? And what happens? It just becomes a little bit of a competition, and then after the competition is over, it's forgotten. But Ellen started giving of herself, and as she did this, her gift kept giving. She would send them a cassette tape telling them how wonderful they are, what geniuses they are, what marvelous beings they are, and they'd listen to it again and again and again. Those children are all absolutely fantastic. Now, did Ellen's gift to them have any even minuscule contribution to who they are? I'd say quite a big one. Yes, having excellent parents, having excellent teachers at school, being excellent in themselves are all very good. But we have a woman who wrote in today that she had picked up one of our gists, an old gist from 2001 at the INTA Congress in 2003, and just a couple weeks ago. And she read an article in there, and this article spoke to her. The article didn't say anything different than all other articles say. But it just said, you're in charge of yourself. You're in charge of your thought. And this touched her. Somehow it touched her in just such a way that made her act. And so she changed a long-standing attitude. And within days, she came out of the funk that she was in. And she came out of the bad, low spirit that she was in and moved on high, after having had that for 2.5 years. I mean, perhaps some great grief came into her life and knocked her out of the saddle. But those couple of words, we never know. But you see, she did it for herself. No one did it for her. We may have had the words there, as we do for so many people, and some people respond to them and some don't. Now, Ellen has been teaching all of us and saying, you are not giving a sermon in church, you are not giving a seminar, you're not speaking to people, you're not sharing with people, you're not loving people because you want them to change. You are sharing with people who you are, what you believe, what your way of life is, what your attitude is. And if, big if the people respond to what you say, voila. If the people do not respond to what you say, you shake the dust off your feet and go on your way. And you don't say they were bad people. You don't say they were inconsequential people who really are nothing anyhow. You just go your way. Now, do you think that everyone who attended the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus gave instantly responded to him with great acclamation? No. Many of them were playing with the kids, were taking care of their... Many of them were talking to each other. Many of them were doing all sorts of things like people do at these outdoor or indoor gatherings, even indoor gatherings. And then they go home. But the seeds were planted. The seeds of love, of peace, of harmony, of goodness, they were planted. And Jesus didn't care if any seed grew or not. He was just Johnny Appleseed, going around the world planting apple seeds, going around the world planting seeds of love, of confidence, of joy, of peace, of honor, of unconditional love. And maybe today they don't hear him, but the seeds are planted. And maybe that giant acorn seed grows up into a beautiful being, and they end up being the President of the United States. And as they're the President of the United States, they're asked to do something which is not totally perfect on behalf of their own attitude. And the little voice within them says, hey, is that important enough for you to violate who you are? And he listens to that little voice. He doesn't really know that it came from some particular person at some particular time who was sharing beautiful thoughts. And then he responds to that in harmony and peace. And because of him, war was averted. Because of him, peace was ensured. Because of him, work was made available in a bad work time. I mean, we look at President Roosevelt, and we say he was not a real person. He wasn't a real person. He was rich. He lived well. He had, I believe it was tuberculosis, and he couldn't walk, and not tuberculosis, but polio. And he had to be in a wheelchair. And the newspapers didn't show him in the wheelchair, only after his death. And they supported him all the way because he was a president in the time of the Depression, and he brought the country out of a depression into a very positive, powerful attitude. And then the war came along, and he tried to be a separatist, you know, isolationist, not going into war, and keeping us apart from that. Although we know that he worked behind the scenes with the warlords in one way or another, in like England and what have you, France. But he did so many things. And then, during the war, his voice was so famous, like Churchill's, which supported the nation, and the nation rose up as a body in harmony and peace toward the war. And the war was won, not by the guns, but the war was won by the attitudes of the people. The British would not be destroyed. The Americans were always out there winning. That was just the way it was. And you see, these attitudes that are implanted into us by our leaders and by the people who guide us and the people who inspire us, those attitudes are what we live our life by. And today, we may have lived our life by that, but tomorrow, of course, there is no tomorrow, it's always today, but tomorrow, we come to another point in our existence where we are called upon to make a decision, and we remember what our values are. And remembering what our values are, we make a right decision. Now, can you do that? If you're going to hold out your hand to the universe which flows through you, in you, as you, for the infinite abundance, being absolutely independently wealthy, you cannot say a nickel will do, a penny will do, a million will do. Because just as soon as you say any number, some desire is going to come to your mind that's going to be numberless. And it's going to say, hey, hey, you didn't ask for enough, you know. And so it's not a matter of asking. You're the prince or princess, and you didn't know it. And they told you you're the prince or princess, and it took a moment for you to catch your breath and act like it. Okay, you're the wealthy one, but you don't know it. And it takes you a moment to act like that, to act as your wealth is. And we're not interested in lightening the burdens for others. Because if we see others with burdens, it's because we have a burden. What we're interested in doing is to create the world in our image and in our likeness. Oh my God, somebody else said that. They beat us to the punch. Yeah, God and Genesis beat us to the punch. Excuse me, but those were our words. Those were our thoughts. Those were our attitudes. And that's who we are today. So let's speak our word, claim the truth about ourselves, and enjoy the infinite abundance of the world. And while Ernest Holmes' ideas here are very powerful and very relative, the divine moves through them and past whatever we might say is the need to work with others because you want to be kind to them, to creating others, being master of themselves. Now, what's the level you want to work on? Whatever that level is, you go for it. But just remember, you are either relative, human, or you are divine, absolute. Now, which direction are you aiming toward? Being a good relative human person who gets along well with the world, or the absolute, the divine, the allness? It's an either or thing. But we can be human and untouched, looking toward our mastership. But we can be divine, and there's nothing to touch us, because we do not see with judgment anything that exists. So, think about these things. It's just the beginning of a wonderful adventure, but I know you'd love to make it, because it's you. I love you, I love you, I love you.